So the shiur tonight is Le'ilei Nishmas Chaya Rivka Bas Yehudi Yeshua HaKoyin. She should be, as my grandmother would say, a Gutta Beta. Yeshua Yehuda? Yeshua Yehuda HaKoyin should be a Gutta Beta. As my grandmother would say, Meliz Yosha, as we'd say in Hebrew, for the entire Jewish people and for the family. And her Schuyos should stand in our merit right now. So there's a lot to do. Alright, there's a million things, a million directions that we can talk about. Clearly, I'm not going to keep you here all night. Unless anybody has been fighting insomnia also, we can try to take care of that also. But in terms of really things to be thinking about, things to be doing as we are in the month of Elul, yeah, I need something to lean on. So the rule is either you sit or you stand. But I have nothing to stand against. I
feel like I'm serving drinks.
I'm a cold one.
Yeah, me too. Did I mention I'm driving? No. So in terms of what the avoda that we have to do, what is it exactly that we need to be focusing on in this month of Elul? We know Rabbi Weinberger said many times that he believes the word Elul comes from the word El, to be close to the repetition of the second syllable. Adum Dem means very red, Katantan means very small, and Elul means to be very close. In the words of the Baal Tanya, of the first Chabad Rebbe, that during the time of Elul, HaMelech Basadeh, that he uses a parable to explain that Elul, really the entire heart of Elul, is if one can imagine normally when a person is wants to go see somebody of great stature, the king, it's very, very hard to make it in past the receptionists or the guards, then the receptionists. I'd be scared of the receptionists, more of the guards. It's just my experience itself is that a receptionist is scarier than any guards, even though they're like these old ladies sitting behind desks. They tend to be a lot more scary than the guards with the guns at the front. It's just my experience. Mm-hmm. But you have to get past the guards and the receptionists to be able to see the king, and it's not always such an easy thing. But if one can imagine that the king wants to come and meet with an entire city, if the king invites the city to come, so then the city's not going to come. So they'd be afraid. They're afraid of not only that, tolls and gas and what you're going to feed your horse. That'll be a whole thing to get them to come to his palace. So instead, the king sets up shop right outside of the town. The way the towns were constructed is that you had a town, and around there was a migrash, there was a field surrounding the town, which is still in the town environments, the town line. So the king would stand right outside of the town, and anyone who wants can come see the king. Anyone, you just have to come out of your house and come into the field. You come out and come see the king. But ultimately, what the king really wants is to take everybody back with him into his palace and take him into the throne room so he can be alone with them. There's no way he can get people into the throne room generally unless he sort of coaxes them out of the town and then brings them to his throne room. In essence, this little mashal, this little parable describes the whole fulcrum, the crux of our divine service in the month of Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Aser Yemei Tshuva, Shabbos Tshuva, Yom Kippur, Tos and Slichos over there, Simchas Torah, and Sukkos. That the king is in the field waiting in the month of Elul, trying to get us to come out of our town and to come meet with him. And then to bring us to his capital city at the gate that's already Slichos, into the city, that's Rosh Hashanah, and then into the throne room that's Yom Kippur. Just like we would go into, so this would be God's throne room on the Kodesh Kadesh and the Holy of Holies on Yom Kippur. So the idea is to bring us into the Kodesh Kadesh, into the throne room. And Bimkomo, in his place, there's only Simcha Tamid, which brings us to the entire celebration of Sukkos. And finally, the most intimate expression of Shemini Atzeres and Simchas Torah, which is Bichlal, totally an expression of God and the Jewish people alone, the simcha of just being together with the king. That's the whole Shmini Atzeres. Within this mashal, we can understand, we can try to figure out what we need to be doing at this time. So, if we step back from the mashal, from the parable, into our lives, so we have to go meet the king in the field. We have to go meet that, and that's the avod of El. All of El is just taking a step out. One of Rav Kook's greatest students, it's like playing Superman, Batman. Who was Rav Kook's greatest student? Some people say it was the Nazar. Some people say it was his son, the Tzimkuda. Some people say it was Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Chalap. So one of Rav Kook's greatest students, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Chalap, writes in the Meimarim, the seventh volume, which deals with the Yomim Noraim, that the shofar of Elul is not just something that we blow the shofar every day in the month of Elul, and it's to remind us, on one level, historically it reminds us because the Jewish people messed up their count. Originally they were counting, waiting for Moshe Rabbeinu to come back from the mountain. They're supposed to count 40 days, and they missed a day, they miscounted a day, they counted half a day, they didn't count half a day. They messed up their cheshbon somehow, they messed up their count. And as a result of that, had a lot of tzaras. Some guy made a golden cow, they made a big party, things got a little wild. As a result, every day, they blew the shofar so they would make sure that they got the count right this time. The function of Elul, Chalap explains, is Dirshu Hashem v'himatzo, karov v'yos karov, seek out Hashem when He is near, call Him when He's close. He says, in essence, the real call of the shofar of Elul, not the mitzvah of shofar, but the call of the shofar that we blow every day in the morning in Elul is essentially a question: are you listening? Are we makshiv? Are we listening? Are we being people who listen? Are we listeners? Sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe once told a simple Jewish peddler, you should know Shema is Yisrael. You should know that Shema, the listening, their daharin, is the essence of a Jew. A Jew is somebody who has to be a Shema is a Yisrael. We say Shema Yisrael, so normally we think Hero Israel, But Shema is Yisrael. Shema, the deher and the listening, is the essence of a Jew. The ability to be makshiv, to be mazin, to be able to listen, to hear, to understand, to comprehend and take note. Michachim v'yavin ezeila is bonu b'chasdei Hashem. Who is the one who can concentrate, who can focus, and concentrate on the chasadim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? That Elul, the avoda of the shofar. The avodah of Elul, the shofar blowing, is to say, are you listening? It's a question, are you listening? Are you listening, not just hearing the noise? We say this to our kids all the time. It's been said about us also. It's a wonderful cycle. I know you hear me, but are you listening? I say to my son all the time, do you hear me? Yes. Are you listening? No. I told you to put on your shoes. They're like, go, we have to do that. I heard you, but you're not moving. Well, I didn't listen. So, the shofar is, are you listening? The message of the shofar is, are you listening? Mm. We're going to try to, over the next, 20 minutes, half an hour or so, to try to come up with two different gishot of how to listen. Of how to listen to the internal voice within ourselves. Of the voice of Hashem through his Hashkacha Pratis. They say that there's no more prophecy anymore, but you hear a voice behind you in the marketplace that's still God talking to you. That how can we listen? How can we listen to ourselves? How can we listen to the world around us and be listening to people in order to prepare for Rosh Hashanah? If Elul is that time getting ready in the field to go to the capital city, so then what can we do but to listen? So we have to learn how to listen. To learn how to hear when the king is in the field. So we're going to focus on two gishos, two different approaches, one of which is from Rav Kook, and one of which is from Rav Michael Zilber. Rav Kook writes in the Anayah, on the Gemara and Shabbos. There's a discussion in the Gemara and Shabbos whether or not a person's allowed to read by the light of a candle. Maybe it's an olive oil lamp or a candle. And our concern is that if you're going to sit by an olive oil candle, so the light isn't always so clear. And we're afraid that if you're reading, you know, it's normal for a person, I guess not so normal for us, because we just sit here and our lamps just work for us. But when you try to read by candlelight in the aftermath of Hurricane Wilma, which was one of the weirdest Shmi Atzeres and Simchas Torahs of my life, so it was night and there was no electricity. You know, and even if you left your flashlights on, they still would go out by, you know, sometime late, and I wanted to learn a little bit. So you're sitting there and you have to learn by candlelight. That was the weirdest thing ever. I mean, people did it all the time, I guess, but, you know, we're not used to that. So you're sitting there and you want to just tilt the candle over, because when you tilt the candle over, the wax flows down and you get a clearer light out of the thing. I never experienced such a thing before in my life, that I had to hold the candle up to make sure that the light would burn brighter. So there's a discussion in the Gemara whether or not you're allowed to do such a thing on Shabbos, because clearly you'll read, and maybe you want to see the word. The books, the print in Gemaras are small, and you want to have a clear light. So we're afraid you'll tilt over the lamp a little bit so that you could read a little clearly. And there's two opinions. One says you can, one says you can't, because it's one of these maybe type of decrees. Well, maybe you'll do this. So, you know, a Jewish answer, well, maybe I won't do this. So what happens is Rishma ben Elisha says, you know what, I'm going to read by a candle, I'm not going to tilt it over. So he's sitting there on a Shabbos and he's reading, and he caught himself, he put his hand on the candle, he was about to tilt it, maybe he did tilt it, maybe he didn't tilt it, apparently he did tilt it. And then he stood up and he said, you know what, after Shabbos I'm going to write myself a little note that Yishmael ben Elisha was reading, and I tilted the candle. And when the Beis Hamikdash is rebuilt, I'm going to bring a fat chatas, a fat cow, as a sin offering. The wonders, the plios that are in this Gemara are, you know, unbelievable. We're going to focus on one nekuda, one point that Rav Kook derives from this Agada in his own inimitable way. So Rav Kook says that he asks the question, why is it that Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, number one, so you're going to do tshuva, so do tshuva. So what's the point of taking out a piece of paper and writing it down? It's a very, very interesting question. Why should you write it down? Okay, so yeah, there's an aveira that you did a mistake. A person bears the consequences of his actions on his conscience constantly. Or as David HaMelech said, that my chatasi l'negdi summit, that my sin is before me constantly. So I need to write in the book. I don't need to write in the book. What do I need to write in the book for? Why do I have to write this down? Mm. Cook says, Givaldic. Listen to this. This is something, in fact, that I said it over once in the middle of a psychology class. They're having a debate about a certain type of test and a certain theory. And I quoted this over in the name of Rav Kook, and then the discussion really ended because nobody could say anything else afterwards. He said that essentially, you know, a person's heart is like an onion. Not that it smells bad, not that it makes you cry, but it has layers. The Zohar writes in one place that a person's heart has many, many layers. It's glidi, glidi. The Gemara says also it's layer upon layer upon layer. It's not like a full chunk of flesh. There's many, many layers over it, and shiny halev deshia, and it's smooth. They have these different layers of flesh over the heart. So he says that the fact of the matter is that a person is very, very complicated. And when a person does something, you need to write down when a person does something that's just stemming from some type of problem, from some type of baggage, from some type of issue, some type of pagam nishmati, if you would, that the person bears upon themselves, it doesn't always reveal itself all at once. Rebbe has said this many times in Sharon, you know, I'm experiencing it now also, that people come and sit and talk and talk and talk and talk for hours and hours and hours until you finally get to the root of the matter. Of course, if you were with a therapist, it would happen a lot faster because they charge per hour. You know, but already, so he's the rabbi, so I can just beat around the bush. There's somebody at our house last night till late last night, like 12:30. This was the issue. No, that was the issue. No, this was the issue. I'm like, stop hawking me a chinic already. What is it? Is it this or is it that? And really, the truth of the matter is that, call it a defense mechanism, call it the complicatedness of a person, but sometimes pigmei levavot, the problems within our hearts, they don't always come out. And we have all sorts of different defense mechanisms that cover over different things so that we can't always get to the heart of the matter all the time. So Rav Kook says, unbelievably, listen to this. He says, why did Rabbi Elisha, Yishmael ben Elisha, have to write down exactly what happened? Because it was in these specific circumstances that the pagam, that the blemish in his heart was revealed. Only in these specific circumstances. Were there to be some slight difference, it wouldn't happen. And if you want to try to pursue this, to try to correct that which is crooked within our hearts, try to work that out, then you have to write it down, you have to take notice, because people are complicated, as Cook says. Our neshamas are complicated. We know that not the first time our neshamas are here in this world. Now we have baggage. Now a person comes to a therapist with baggage from a childhood. Person comes into the world with baggage from 1,000 childhoods, with 1,000 families, with 1,000 mothers-in-law. You can imagine, right? You can understand that. So it's complicated, and it's hidden. That there are different moving, as it were, moving coverings over your heart. That at one certain time, this will be revealed. Vesulo, but anything else, no. That in other circumstances, it won't be revealed. And therefore, the door is open, catch it now. It's the equivalent, if you would, to borrow a term, of a Freudian slip. It's equivalent because why? Because in actuality, something has been revealed from your inner consciousness of yourself, and Midos and Meichen, and all that stuff. Your mind and your heart and your attributes, and something stuck its hand out, and unless you catch it, it's going to disappear again. So Yishmael ben Elisha wrote it down. In these circumstances, this is what happened. So now it's something I can work on. Because otherwise, you'll forget about it. Okay, so I'll do tshuva, Baruch Hashem, tshuva works, and part of the damage can be repaired. But until I can perfect my character, until I can find what's wrong and try to work that out, it's still going to haunt me, and I'm not going to know when it's going to surface. So if Cook says, you had to write it down, because if you didn't, you would lose the opportunity. So gisha number one, approach number one, to be a listening person from Rav Kook, that we see it's very, very clear. You have to go. And when a person wants to be a listening person, you have to write it down. Write down what is it that's bugging you? What are the circumstances that is bugging you? Be specific. Be specific in what it is, so then we can start to think, okay, what are the causes? What are the effects? What's the degree of what I'm trying to deal with here? In terms of my life, in terms of that within my character that needs to be worked on, what is it? How do I get to it? How did it happen? You know, as it were, so we can put up a wanted poster, if you would. You know, can't have plastic surgery to try to escape it. We'll get a DNA fix on it. We'll know, we'll be able to track down this problem. This pagam musari, this blemish in the internal ethics and ethics of yourself. That's gisha number one. Gisha number two is very, very similar, just a little different. Rav Matl Zilber, Rav Moshe Wolfson's son-in-law, who's the Stachin Rebbe, so brings up another interesting point. So, you know, there was this scandal a couple of years ago with this whole Muncie thing with the meat and the Muncie and the guy up there. He says, if you think about it, it's really, you know, the whole parsha is very weird. Right? The whole parsha is very, very weird. Besides, you know, whatever, what moves a person to do everything? You know, to be exceedingly stringent in every area of your life, except for you sheft non-Jewish meat to people. Right? Everything else, it's just, I sell tarfas to people. But everything else is like really, really stringent. And then this one nakuda, this one point, he's like totally enraptured by the Yetzer Hara. If there was a guy in Muncie who then decided, okay, I'm going to move to Comac and open up a Treif Butcher store, and I'm going to wear blue jeans and a flannel shirt, right, and sell pig. Okay, so that would make more sense to us. But there's an internal contradiction, which strikes us and says, wow, that's just weird. How do you, you know, everything else, but there's one nakuda, there's one point, that's where you're off. So Rav Matl says a fascinating thing. He says that by nature, a lot of times there's a certain laziness within ourselves that it's something we just don't want to deal with, so we'll try to ignore. There's something, and this again, Kaviyachol, you'll pardon me, that we'll call it suppressing it or pushing it into the unconsciousness, that there's something wrong, but I shove it in a closet. And I shove it in a closet. I don't want to deal with it. So I'll live with all sorts of crazy contradictions in my life because I just don't want to try to work it out. It's bad. So, you know, so his crazy thing was either taiva for money or a love for selling non-kosher meat. I'm assuming it was money because I don't know what type of taiva people have for selling non-kosher meat, unless it's for money. But, okay, I have this thing. It pushes in the closet, so I, you know, walk around with nice Shabbos clothing and send my kids to these yeshivas, and, you know, and I go and daven vasikin, and, you know, maybe even finish. And then I have this crazy taiva that pops up. Because I'd rather not deal with it. I'd rather sweep it on the carpet, toss it in the closet, forget about it, lock the door, walk away. But we know that when you keep throwing things into the closet, eventually you're going to open up the closet one day, everything's going to fall out on you. Another piece of experience that I've found in my life. you know, before you know it, you're like, all your action figures are falling on your head, and the balls, and all, you know, all the clothes that you didn't fold, they all like come crashing down on your head. And even then, it's not going to, you know, you're still going to go through the motions and pretend like nothing's happened. Okay, I'm up to my head in junk, but I'll still pretend like the rest of it. Why? Because I'd rather just not deal with it. Rav Matl quotes the Bali Musar that says that a person, when you think that you're learning Sifrei Musar, a person learning Sifrei Avoda, it's so hard. But, you know, this is what we're trying to aspire to. You know, if I were just come and tell you to be mediocre, it really wouldn't be much of a shiur, and, you know, we could just go home after 5 minutes. But I don't think anybody would really want to hear that for that long. He says, when a person learns Mesilas Yesharim, the key is not to keep it in the book, but everywhere you go, you should see life as Mesilas Yesharim. It's not that's why Rav Huttner, Freifeld used to say that Rav Huttner never carried a sefer when he went. It's very firm to walk around his farm all the time. Rav Huttner didn't go around with a sefer because he just saw all of life as a sefer, as a Musar sefer. Because when you're a makshiv, when you're listening, when you're aware, when you're a sensitive soul, then all of the world is contains some message for you. And there's no need to look at it in a book because what I'm seeing, what I'm experiencing right now is giving me a very clear message. Very, very clearly, when we think about this guy in Muncie, so it's very clearly telling us, you know, on one level, you know, where the type of money can come from. On another level, where it has to tell us the dangers of sweeping things under the carpet. To be a Jew who's listening, to be a person who's listening and looking and trying to, you know, not trying to go and say, oh, well, this guy, he didn't read the Maseilas Yesharim. But it's a message to you, not a running commentary on everybody else. That everything that we see it by the Baal Shem Tov, we see it by Yisrael Salanta, that it's a rule that everything that we see is supposed to impact us somehow and teach us a lesson somehow. As we go out to try to be a listening Jew, to say, what message is this telling me? Where am I going with this? Am I listening to the messages within my life and trying to inculcate them? This is another sniff. There's another approach which we can take to try to incorporate into our lives during the month of Elul. That to be listening Jews. So we can be writing Jews, and we have to be listening Jews. Well, you know, once we see something happens in ourselves, and also to be listening Jews, to be Jews who, when we see things happening, we should understand that there's an inherent message within ourselves, not to push things under the carpet, but to react to them immediately. Ultimately, of course, the point of all of this, the point of tshuva, is not something, you know, it's not that we're just trying to get out of that of onesh, we're trying to get a, you know, get away from punishment. But the point of all of this, as Rav Chalap says, is to remind ourselves to come to a level of closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, an awareness and a closeness to God. The tshuva is not, oh, I'm a bad boy, after, you know, I guess I should do some tshuva before I, you know, before, you know, Yom Kippur comes and I get zapped, or my business is not going to go so well, or I'm going to forget to put oil in the car and the engine's going to seize or something. You know, it's not that I'm trying to avoid punishment. It's that the more I have these problems that are hidden from me, that God is sending me messages to try to detect, whether it's in my own life that I'm supposed to write them down, or that things are occurring in front of me that I'm supposed to listen to. But the point of all this is God sending a message to all of us to be close, to have a real relationship with Him. Not to hide behind the many layers of a person's heart. Not to hide behind the laziness inherent within a person, that not to listen to the messages which are being sent. But God's saying, be close to me. Come back to the Tanya's Mashal. I want to meet you. I want you to be here with me in the most intimate way. Come meet me in my throne room. But just telling you, come meet me in my throne room, it's not going to work because it's too far away for you. Come, I want to meet you in the field. I'll meet you just outside of your house. All you have to do is step outside. Just take one little step outside. Take one little step to listen. To listen to the internal stirrings of your soul. Take one little step to listen to the current events that unfold before you that are giving you a message. Take that one little step outside. Dodi shalach yado min achor, the Derech HaNoyim, the Slonim Rebbe says, that through gaping holes in our lives, the Kadosh Baruch Hu stretches His hand through. The mashal is in Shir HaShirim, that the beloved calls to his beloved who's there in her house, and he's trying to get in to speak to her, and she locks the door, she doesn't want to get off the bed. So ultimately, before he leaves, there's a little hole, he sticks his hand through that little hole in the door to try to reach out to her. Solana Rebbe says, Dodi shalach yado min achor, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sticks his hand into our lives sometimes from the gaping spaces, the things that are missing, and makes us tries to call to us that we should listen. Calls to, through the gaping holes where we should be saying, hey, there's something missing. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu reaching out to us. Not because otherwise you're going to get zapped, but because I want a relationship with you. I want to be close to you. But how else am I going to do it unless you just take one little step outside of your life, outside of your comfort zone, just a little bit, to try to be close? Take one little step outside. Write down for one day. It's uncomfortable when we understand the truth of who we are sometimes. There's a Calvin and Hobbes strip that where Calvin goes and multiplies himself in this cardboard box or something, so there's a whole bunch of him running around, And in the artist notes, he said, it would probably be a pretty scary thing to find out the truth about what everyone else thinks about us. Sometimes it's uncomfortable. But ultimately, it makes to a bigger and better us. And it's not there just to torment us. It's not there because we're, you know, the religious personality enjoys masochism, or sadism and masochism, and masochism then likes to inflict sadism because of the masochism that he subverts. But it's because sometimes it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to deal with certain things that we just rather ignore. But we deserve to have a much happier and bigger existence. We deserve to, you know, Akash Baruch Hu says that you deserve to be happy. You'd rather live in your delusions and your illusions of sweeping things under the carpet. Well, so let's get a little real. You don't have to get very real, just get a little more real. I'll help you along the way. Just step a little bit outside of your house into the field with me. And I'll take you into my palace. I'll take you into my throne room. Then Nagila v'nismecha bach. Then we'll rejoice together. But you have to take that first step. The Rav Motl Zilber brings the quotation from the Al Shech HaKadosh that said he discussed a very scary point. That in times in the Beis Hamikdash, it was wholly possible for a person to go to the Holy Temple and to hear the music and smell the incense and eat the kudshin and go home and go back to their lives. It's a scary thought. The point of the Beis HaMikdash wasn't that we were supposed to have this huge marble edifice that we could visit in Jerusalem, where you could get some good barbecued meat and smell some nice things and see the Kohanim, they look so pretty. The point of the Beis HaMikdash is L'man Yilmadu L'Yiroses Hashem, is to go to a place to strengthen ourselves, to be mechazik, to be inspired. The days of Elul, of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, are days which are to inspire us and then to carry us through the rest of the year with that inspiration. You know, there are places where they videotape the dancing after Yom Kippur, should they, shouldn't they, back and forth. There's been a lot of discussion, I know definitely Nation, there's been a lot of discussion that this year we're definitely not allowing a videotape of the dancing Motzei Yom Kippur, and it appears on the internet anyway a couple of days afterwards. The issue is that if it's just something which stays on your MP3 player, if it just stays on YouTube, then we totally miss the point. If that simcha can be inculcated into ourselves, if that movement towards reality, towards being real, can be inculcated into ourselves, then our avodah will be for something. And even if not, it's worthwhile just to be to be out in the light for a minute. But you know already. Rav Freifeld said, if it wasn't for the fact that I always hoped that I could be a Vilna Gaon, I wouldn't have even gotten this far. So let's hope to be a Vilna Gaon and say that we can take it with us and run through the Yamim Narayim with this inspiration. The ability to step outside of our houses and to find ourselves in a new world. To step outside of the painness and the ignorance of all the things which bring us down and get real with ourselves. To a more sensitive us, to more sensitive towards our families, or more sensitive towards our responsibilities towards our families, or more sensitive towards our relationships with the master of the world and with the people around us. That then is the point of El. That then is the point of what we need to do, is to step out of our houses, go into the field. And how can we do that? One way is to try to listen carefully. Another way is to try to make sure that we make notes of everything that happens so that we know where the problems are coming from. And finally, to remember that self calls self, it's all because the Kadosh Baruch Hu loves us. It's all because he's calling out to us from these holes within us that he wants to have a relationship with us. We just have to step outside. It's not because we like to be upset or depressed. It's because Hashem loves us and we love Hashem, and the soul burns towards Hashem and Hashem burns towards our soul all the time. We should be zayich very, very soon, not just to have Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur with our families and our little shuls all over the place, but ultimately to go to the Beis HaMikdash, the Nismach Kulanu, Nagila V'Nismach HaBach, in that place the place of ultimate oneness, the place of Beis HaMikdash. We should be there very soon with all of our families, whether they're here, whether they've gone to the next world, they'll be there with us also. We should merit to see those days very, very soon.